This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 7th of July, 2023. A very remarkable session yesterday, driven by some very interesting data points coming out of the U.S. and the ripple effects across markets. Plenty to chew on here, guys. Let's get started with sort of what was unfolding yesterday. We saw two data points that really got things going here. First was the June ADP private payrolls data point at 497K. I haven't done one of your how many multiples of the sigmas or whatever analysis, Peter, on that, but that surprise factor versus the 220s or so expected is very large. And actually, if you take the pre-pandemic data set of this data series back to 2010 when it started, I say pre-pandemic because there were some crazy numbers as we were sort of rebuilding and people going back to work during the pandemic, there was nothing even approaching this number. So this is a massive surprise to the market, and it comes after we saw the very strong May payrolls data as well. And then the sort of the kicker a little bit later was the ISM services coming in stronger than expected, 53.9 versus the 51-ish expected, and that sort of almost 50 level the prior month, suggesting an acceleration in the services sector. A very uncomfortable set of data points for the Treasury market as we saw the long end blowing higher, that long end driving tighter financial conditions. We've talked about how easy financial conditions are of late, and that the only two things that could change that would be A, bad news being bad news. Certainly didn't get that yesterday, or signs of reheating. We got signs of reheating yesterday, and that drove a sell-off, it seems, in the equity market.
We there's so many slides we should have in the slide deck today, because you're mentioning a lot of things, and the financial conditions index, they're very loose still relative to what is the objective to actually tame inflation. But if you look at financial conditions since 2010, we do actually have the tightest financial conditions over a prolonged period in the U.S. But as you said, they still too loose. So the services sector, John, this is what we also have been banging on this podcast. I mean, so many people are focusing on the wrong things. I believe the goods inflation, I don't think it really matters at this point. It is all about the services. And look at the ADP figures. The services increase was 350,000 jobs. Mm. And you have services inflation running at 6.5% annualized. You have wages accelerating at somewhere around 7%. It's the same we see in Europe, around 7%. And still you're adding 300,000. And if you go to the slide three before we go back to the equity market, you can see on the JOLTS openings there. Powell have said that the Fed is one of the indicators the Fed is looking at is the job job openings, and then you divide it by the number of unemployed people in the economy, because then people that are unemployed are the people that have saying in the surveys they're looking for a job. So basically here you have a scale ratio of how many available jobs to the number of people looking for a job, and by that measure the labor market in the US is still extremely tight. It's coming down, but it's not coming down fast. And I think this is really some of a lot of the indicators yesterday, John, are really supporting this notion that the Fed is right and the market is totally wrong-footed here. And as I said on the internal call, I think one of the things that are happening is that we have had this 13-year period where people have been growing this mindset that it's always a market that is right. The market is pushing the Fed around. It's us that are setting the direction for the Fed. And right now we have this tug of war, and the Fed is actually saying, you know what, guys? You're not in control, because we have really important things to get under control, namely inflation. So these pricing from the markets will get smashed.
Yes. I wanted to go, because we have two things to look at here. You just brought up a topic that we need to thinking on or continue talking about before we get back to the internals of yesterday's session, which was very important, and also some of the geography of what happened here. I mean, Europe had a horrible day yesterday. But just on your point there, we've talked about it a little bit in the last couple of podcasts. So the Fed is sort of seems to have decelerated into a we're data dependent mode. So they wanted to tack on those two insurance sort of rate hikes for the rest of this year, just in case things remained more resilient and that core inflation was stickier than they expected. This seems to be what was the narrative, at least to my mind. And the market remains, even after yesterday, remains reluctant to price anything more from the Fed this year. They're not pricing a higher terminal rate, even after what we saw yesterday. Of course, we get two more months of this that they might be forced to, but the Fed needs. So the big surprise would be if the Fed comes in here and says, this is really surprising us, And we think rates could go much higher. So in the meantime, all the market is willing to do, and I'll take you to slide four here, is to sort of price out those rate cuts rather than pricing in a higher terminal rate. And we're seeing that in this chart is maybe a bit confusing here. So I put the basic 2-year and the 10-year there. We see the 2-year has been crawling higher. Again, not pricing a higher terminal rate, but pricing out those rate cuts. So you see something like where is the U.S. 2-year rate going to be in 2 years? And you can see it's still remarkably low. The market thinks we're going into a lower inflation environment, maybe recession, and that the 2-year rate 2 years from now will be well sub 4%. Although that is up, as you can see, the repricing there has been very, very sharp from the low threes just in a matter of a week or so. So there still could be more more profound deepening of this narrative if the Fed comes on board and sort of starts to guide for something, saying it's getting unsettling. And we'll see. The first chance might be Waller next week. We'll get to that in the macro calendar overview. But
I think actually you see it on slide five, John, because there you have the December SOFA contract. You saw the big repricing when Silicon Valley Bank blew up back in March. And the expectation there was that, oh, we're going to get a lot of rate cuts this year. And you know, maybe this is the signal that the U.S. economy will go into a terrible recession. And then as we lingered along, and then by around the second half of May, the market really got something to chew on as the indicators continued to show inflation was stronger than expected, the economy was holding up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now we are basically down at the levels before the banking crisis.
Yes, but still not at a higher peak terminal rate, at least through December. And actually the moves are slightly larger than the one you mentioned if you go further out into, let's say, a year forward from now. They're larger from day to day, for example, the December 2024 contract, et cetera. And that is, again, about pricing out those rate cuts that were previously priced in.
Yeah.
Let's rewind, Peter, because I wanted to address your graphic there on slide two, showing the different sectors. Some really incoherent moves yesterday relative to some of the implications and the narrative we're talking about here. You know, we had that whole period where this every tick up in interest rates meant that the NASDAQ 100 ticked down. We got through that period. People started ignoring yields for a while, and suddenly they're rattling the cage, if you will, and yet those sectors, the NASDAQ 100, it seems oblivious here. Just take us through some of your thoughts on the internals.
Yeah, it was basically two different worlds, because the jump higher in the bond yields yesterday really, and the across the board higher bond yields, but in Europe with the bond yield, it really crushed the European equities. We were down 3% in Europe. So here the dynamic was, okay, we're almost suffocating from these high interest rates. This could really cause a recession, and you have had the Eurocoin growth indicators lately showing a dramatic slowdown in the European economy. But then you had the surprise German factory orders yesterday. We talked about that. Was it only military? We don't really know. So I think Europe is much more a big guessing game right now. But then if you think about the US session, that is what we're trying to display here on slide two. So higher interest rates on the long end of the yield curve is what's used to price cash flows. It's used as your discount rate, and then you add some risk premiums on top of that. So when the cost of capital goes up, the present value of future cash flows go down unless there's an offset from a high expected growth rate. And typically when you have high interest rates, it's also because you have a higher growth rate. So there's a tug of war between those two forces. But as you said, you know, the US equity market is one of the most expensive equity markets in the world on a forward-looking basis. So the duration profile and sensitivity to a higher discount rate is also the highest. And it is specifically the highest for the information technology sector.
AI,
exactly.
Yeah. As a subsector of that, yeah.
Exactly. And that was the sector that did the best yesterday. Look at this table we have here, only down 0.16% for the session. And then you had energy. So if interest rates were the only thing that can explain why that was the case is because the growth outlook for technology was improving with the economy. But why would energy then be down 2.5% and consumer discretionary down 1.6%? So I think, and real estate, only down 0.6%. So I think there was a lot of conflicting signals, and I'm suspecting there's a lot of, you know, some of that is still related to retail investors. They still play a very, very dominant role, I think, in setting prices for technology stocks.
And perhaps leveraging their views via options buying, and on a day like today with zero days to expiry into the weekly expiry of the single stock futures could be an interesting session, to say the least. Volatility-wise, where we saw quite a pump yesterday, but it didn't. A lot of it faded, that move. All right, we didn't see a huge pump in Ola was in crude oil, which remains range-bound, getting towards the top of that range. You would think if we're starting to get some more, some stronger signals from the U.S. economy, and we saw some pretty strong recent demand numbers for gasoline, et cetera, that this is going to start feeding into the oil price more forcefully at some point. What's weighing down crude, or what's going to bust crude out of this range?
Good question, John. As you said before we started, this crude chart doesn't look inspiring, and that's true. We've been range bound since May, but I think there's a tug of war going on beneath the surface, and that is between the FOMC and OPEC, really two of the key drivers for the oil price run. FOMC quite clearly through the risk of further rate hikes and hiking until something breaks, hitting demand. On the other hand, we got production cuts from OPEC, courtesy of most recently by Saudi Arabia, starting to have an impact. We're seeing the front end of the curve in both WTI and Brent back in backwardation. That's quite a supportive. That is indicating of some tightness. But generally, we're really struggling to break out here. And I think the problem with having cut at this point in time is obviously these barrels need to be put back into the market. And one of the biggest concerns at any given time in the oil market is the threat of lack of supply in the future. And what we don't have right now is that threat at all, because on the right-hand side, you can see the spare capacity, which is basically the availability of additional production increased by, this is just the Middle East. It's 5 million, and that will be 6 million this month because Saudi Arabia has cut by another million. So we got the highest spare capacity since the middle of 2021. That's probably potentially even higher because some of these countries could potentially ramp up even more. So what I'm saying is basically, even though we should see a pickup in demand, the risk of a sharply higher price is really only going to be driven by speculators potentially getting back in on the momentum game, because the availability of spare capacity is likely going to dampen the price. So I think the message is a battle between those two major focus right now, but still a range-bound market.
All right, let's go to the FX market, where I think we have a very interesting set of developments here on the back of yesterday's big yield move in the U.S. Of course, the most straightforward initial development was that the dollar strengthened quite viciously. So, on the back of that, but then the reaction was largely muddled. So we have a sort of muddled dollar reaction net at the end of the day and coming into today. And I think this is surprising. Yes, I wouldn't have predicted this necessarily, but it does make sense if we look across the entire FX space and if we look at what financial conditions are doing, which is tightening, at least in terms of those things that are most risk exposed. So the Japanese yen strengthening quite viciously overnight. There was a fundamental data point there in the wages coming out for May at 2.5%, way better than the 1.2% expected, and suggesting that March wage round is starting to feed into to wages here. This is the key for the Bank of Japan to start to normalize policy, so that is a very important development. There was also, though, a Bank of Japan deputy governor out saying, indicating little chance for July moves from the Bank of Japan at its meeting at the end of July here. But regardless, what we saw here was a strong yen move, and we have to say, this is unusual, because the yen usually would be weaker on the back of higher long U.S. yields. Why is it stronger? It's the financial conditions angle, and I think it's the unwinding of carry trade angle in particular. We started seeing some of these carry trades coming under pressure with the higher long U.S. yields of late, and it really exploded yesterday with moves lower in the Mexican peso, the Brazilian real, and even prior to that, we were seeing something like the Hungarian forint weakening sharply. So I'll take you forward to slide 7, and just to indicate sort of where the market is coming from and how the positioning may be extremely aggressive and the trade itself might be extremely crowded, risking a significant further backup in these carry trades as long as we're in sort of risk-off mode. So what I've taken here is you see the dollar Mexican peso chart on the right, that enormous move sort of engulfing last month of action in a single session. It was actually coming in higher still just before the podcast. We started recording the podcast. And on the left, I show you the return of a single leverage long Mexican peso short Japanese yen trade since early 2022. Single leverage, including carry, total return 75%. For a simple currency trade over the course of about 18 months. And look at the return profile in the last few months. Just an incredible trade Japanese traders, many of them are Forex traders, and they're happy to speculate on their currency. So there is, I suspect, a very large positioning adjustment risk here if this risk off continues. Just to highlight these things and to draw a line under why this happens. And just, and you can see in the dollar Mexican peso example, if you look back at March, there was an enormous backup there around the banking turmoil as well.
And then people are saying that the FX trading is boring, and that's why we all want to trade technology stocks. I think 75% is pretty interesting in such a short time frame.
Yeah, with the Sharpe ratio, it was pretty decent there as well. and that takes, I think, it's a decent segue into gold then, Ola, which is really struggling with what the heck to look at as well. Maybe the financial conditions angle supportive, but then the higher U.S. yields, a headwind. And I guess that's reflected in a bit. It's sort of locked into a range here still.
It is indeed. And I think the conclusion after yesterday's session is there's still a bit in the market. We had that rejection below 1900 last week. And yesterday we didn't manage to get down to that level, even though we saw that spike in yield. So there is something going on, some interest coming into the market despite the headwind from rising yields. What that is remains to be seen. I think some of it's probably central bank buying, again taking advantage of this lower level to accumulate once again. So that's creating a soft floor in the market. At the same time, as you mentioned, John, the dollar did not really strengthen on the back of this move higher in yields, and that's also adding some support. And maybe the market's just potentially speculating that, well, if this rate hike regime continues at this potential pace, what risk will they have to the economy over the long term? And I think also yesterday, simply we did see that correction in the stock market, which we have been waiting for, and potentially that's also adding some support into gold. But for now, real yields are moving higher. That tends to be a drag on gold. So we are not out of the woods yet, and we most certainly, first of all, need to break back above that 21-day moving average around 1930 today to signal any further recovery. So for now, we're likely to remain under pressure while the uncertainty regarding the direction of rates in the U.S. is as elevated as it is.
All right, and let's go back over to the equity market. I'm curious to see how we end off the week as indicated. If we see this move yesterday hold, I mean, it's going to really confuse the heck out of everybody if we get a very weak non-farm payrolls print today. That's just not going to work for this market. But what are you focusing on today, Peter?
Well, a couple of things. So first of all, we had some preliminary figures coming out from Samsung, basically announcing the biggest decline in quarterly revenue since 2009. that was a little bit of a shocker. I think the market had expected, that we had been through the worst in the semiconductors. Samsung is very much tied to consumer electronics and memory chips, etc. But we recently got some more positive vibes from Micron on that account. But so watch Samsung and the semiconductors, because obviously a bad performance there from Samsung in the South Korean market will continue, I guess, here in London trading and New York trading and the overall semiconductor industry. So watch ASML, etc. here in Europe. Technology stocks, as Kuren, which is one of our options specialists in our team, said on this in our internal call. If you look at the implied volatilities across some of the stocks to gauge where the price action is going to be today, he was highlighting very much the technology sector with implied volatilities for the session today at pretty elevated levels here compared to normal. So, and he was singling out specifically Meta. So and talking about Meta, I've been reluctant to broaden this discussion out and talk too much about it, because I don't really think it moves the needle for Meta in the short term. It's a very big business, Meta, but they launched the Threads app, and they got 30 million new users in 24 hours, according to Mark Zuckerberg, and that's actually almost a record. I think it's almost at an inch close to beat ChatGPT. So very successful launch there. And the news came out last night as well that Twitter is actually contemplating lawsuits against Meta for stealing trade secrets, and that was the reason why they could develop this product so fast. So this story is developing quite dramatically. Do you want to say something, John?
No, I just trade secrets. What are the trade secrets? Would these be something that got off of former disgruntled Twitter employees?
That is, I suppose, is the case. Yeah.
Plus, they have a pretty decent user base to attract new users. So I think 30 million is maybe less interesting than the OpenAI, which had to start from scratch. But that's not to pour cold water on your point, but it's just, but go ahead.
Exactly. And the final stocks to watch, of course, not of course, but UK home build is not something we talk so much about normally, but the recent data points are suggesting house prices in the UK are falling at the fastest pace since 2011. A lot of pressure cooking there in the UK economy, and it's hitting those home builders pretty hard. And on this podcast, we have been very silent on the Swedish house market, but we are galloping towards, I wouldn't say an implosion or a meltdown, but something is not good in Sweden. And the central bank, the Riksbank there, is really talking about some disastrous scenarios if they cannot find refinance themselves. And there's a big chunk of debt among the big real estate companies in Sweden that will be refinanced over the next 12 months. So there's very important things going on in Sweden on the horizon there. And SBB is the company that is most in trouble. It's the biggest landlord in Sweden.
Yeah,
we got new record low actually in the Swedish krona yesterday.
It's a remarkable move. And as well, if you look at the situation, there was a similar situation I thought developing back post the global financial crisis. And I said, you know, what happens is if it gets bad enough, it just ends up on the public balance sheet. There'll be a bailout. So I suspect these things aren't allowed. They're only allowed to get so bad before the public steps in. And I suspect that is going to be some eventual solution. They also have a history of doing some pretty dramatic stuff when they had a crisis back in the early 90s.
And it's easier for them to do it because they still have their own currency. So exactly. They're not constrained in the same way as other European countries in the Euro corporation there.
Exactly. That's a good point.
All right. This podcast is turning out to be a long one. So very quickly on slide 11, the earnings watch. Next week's earnings, it really heats up on Thursday. Delta Airlines and PepsiCo, two consumer-oriented stocks. It seems like from... gauging from jet fuel demand indicators, Ole, that the airliners are doing extremely well here in the US. So I wouldn't be surprised to see an upward surprise there from Delta Airlines. And PepsiCo is just humming along. They have a very strong brand, very strong distribution. They're just passing on every single cost of increase in their input cost to their consumers, and the consumer is just happily apparently taking it. And then on Friday, the big one, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, and Citigroup, the three large major commercial banks in the US are reporting on the same day. I've highlighted, I will let this be part of the slide deck for a couple of more times as well next week, the S&P 500 financial sector 12-month forward earnings per share estimate. That was a long word. It's right there. As you can see, they haven't really recovered from that blow they got from the March fallout of Silicon Valley Bank. I still find it odd because you have these high interest rates. And I looked at the average deposit rate for a 3-month certificate in the US. Those numbers are reported by the FDIC. It's still only at 110 basis points.
That's incredible.
And if you think about where interest rates are, I mean...
For three months, you can get a 5%+ now.
Exactly. Yeah. But so that's... I don't really understand why these three banks shouldn't be able to really blast earnings estimates. I know there's a lot of talk about capital markets have been weak, bad conditions, etc. But I'm really leaning towards the financial surprise this quarter. That's my gut feeling, but okay. I could be horribly wrong.
All right, and that would be market or at least sentiment positive, you would think. Let's look at today's macro calendar, and no surprise, U.S. jobs report. I don't think it requires, many of you will be hearing this after it, but I don't think it requires much more than just an inline figure to avoid erasing any of yesterday's reaction. So obviously, it encourages a further deepening of the reaction or a function or an extension of what we saw yesterday. If we see non-farm beating significantly the 200-ish and the low 200s, that's expected. And also note the net revisions. Unemployment rate expected to drop slightly. And we have a couple of Fed speakers coming into view in coming days. There's one that's a voter coming in tonight, Goolsbee. Lagarde speak, not going to expect surprises there. But next week, Waller, I think, is the first chance. He's a hawk. He's on the Board of Governors. That may be the first chance as a general speech about the economy. And we have a series of Treasury auctions, 3s, 10s, and 30s. I'm sure we'll have Altea on next week to talk about those. Could be interesting for demand. What is the demand like at these new high levels in the yield? All right, a lot to get through. It's a Friday, zero DTE for single stock futures. We've got the market suddenly unsettled by the situation. Let's keep our helmets on. Stay careful out there. Have a great weekend when you get there, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.